Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Liz Dunshee, and my co-host is Courtney Camlett.
Hi, everyone.
So we are so happy to be back after our summer hiatus. And to kick off our fall 2024 season, I would also like to recognize that over the summer, we celebrated the podcast's 5-year anniversary, which that is like 5 decades in podcast years. So we're very excited. And we've had terrific guests through the years. So if you haven't been here through the entire time, or if you want to re-listen to early episodes, you can find those on your podcast app or on the corporatecouncil.net. Courtney and I started this podcast because we are both passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the trailblazing women who share that passion. We love connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what's surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we are so delighted to be talking with Karen Boykin-Towns, who is the vice chair of the NAACP's National Board of Directors. Additionally, she founded and serves as president and CEO of Encore Strategies LLC, a boutique consultancy focusing on integrating business and public affairs initiatives, and is a senior advisor at FGS Global, providing insight on dynamic crisis management strategies. Karen is a distinguished strategist, global business and civic leader, and she previously contributed her experience across government, the nonprofit sector, and Pfizer, a Fortune 500 global biopharma company, while also championing civil rights and social justice issues. At Pfizer, Karen began as a senior legislative analyst and advanced to serve as the company's first chief diversity officer in 2008, where she successfully developed an integrated global strategy, resulting in internal progress and external recognition of the company's advances in diversity and inclusion as a competitive advantage. Karen concluded her time at Pfizer as Vice President of Corporate Affairs for their $34 billion innovative medicines business, where she served as a member of the Senior Leadership Committee, which consisted of the top 200 leaders in the global organization. Karen continues to serve on several boards and in other leadership roles, in addition to her role with the NAACP. Karen, we are very excited to get to speak with you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Liz and Courtney, and congratulations on your 5-year anniversary.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a very exciting and interesting 5 years on the podcast. Now, we shared a brief overview of your vast array of experiences and accomplishments, and it makes me a little nervous because it is so significant what you've done. Please tell us a little bit more about what you're doing right now and what you've been most proud of over the course of your whole career.
I think what I'm, well, we're taping today, and it is 48 days until the elections on November the 5th. And so what I'm doing right now is spending a lot of time traveling the country and talking to individuals about the importance of their vote. As we know, this is a consequential election, and regardless of your political leanings, it's just very important that we all exercise our right to vote and understand that we have a voice and we need to use it and we need to be engaged. So that is how I am spending a lot of my time right now. And the next question is, what am I most proud of? I've had the privilege of doing a number of different things, but I think what I'm most proud of, quite frankly, is regardless of whether I was working in state government with my then state senator, David Patterson, who later went on to be our governor of New York, or at Pfizer, or on the boards that I serve, I think I'm most proud of the impact I've been able to have by bringing just a way of not just engaging, but listening and being able to help solve complex issues. And then I would say the opportunity to work with incredible people and help them grow their careers, and to now be able to see the success of many of whom I've mentored or who I was the leader of the team, and just see how they are flourishing in their careers. That's, I'm pretty proud of that as well.
Wow. Yeah, that has to be so rewarding because I imagine that you have worked with a number of incredible up and coming leaders through the years. And so then to see them succeed, that must be wonderful. So you, Karen, became Chief Diversity Officer at Pfizer in 2008. You were the first person to hold that role at Pfizer, and I'm guessing probably one of the first people to hold that title at any large U.S. company. And you currently vice chair the NAACP's National Board of Directors. What are your thoughts on the current state of corporate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and commitments?
As you well know, this issue of diversity, equity, and inclusion has become sort of a political hot potato for which there has been quite a bit of backlash. But at the same time, there have been a number of companies that have been very adamant in terms of their belief of how it is important for their company to thrive in, you know, the marketplace. I'm excited that the Congressional Black Caucus a few weeks ago just issued their report, What Good Looks Like, a Corporate Accountability Report on DE&I. And it's been, at least I've been looking forward to it, because back in December of 2023, they sent to the Fortune 500 companies a survey, in essence, asking them what was their commitment to DE&I. And you know, looking to understand their progress. And so the report just came out. And for those who may not have time to read it, I mean, it really affirmed the commitment to advancing DE&I in business practices and operations, as shared by the almost 200 companies who did respond. And so while there are attacks on the tools of economic opportunity, at the same time, many companies are understanding that whether you are looking for talent, whether you are looking to have better access to, you know, markets, there is something to be said about having policies and procedures and processes that ensures that there is equal access and success for everyone. And I'm still optimistic despite some of the challenges that are being faced.
Yeah, it is a very challenging environment. I mean, you rightly called it a hot potato issue. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend companies balance the call to numerically measure progress in DEI initiatives with the arguments that inclusion can't be measured and that quotas create legal risk?
Well, I think first and foremost, inclusion can be measured, and companies do it every day. But I would say that, you know, it is a delicate task for companies who are concerned about being sued and the like. But I think at the end of the day, and I'm sure you've heard this, DE&I initiatives need to be in alignment with business strategy, right? And it needs to not be a one-off that's looking to necessarily advance some over others, but it needs to be part of reflecting what is needed for the business to benefit, what the business needs to succeed. And so you are able to track inclusion through employee engagement surveys, and I'm sure you've seen them in your times in companies, and inclusion surveys and workplace culture assessments. All of those things help to give a sense of the health of a culture of a company. And so it is measurable, and it's important that as companies are trying to ensure their ability to win in the marketplace, that they are working with legal counsel. And I'm sure you two like that. But it is important to ensure that when you are coming up with these strategies, that you are engaging legal so that you can mitigate risk.
Yeah, and I mean, the legal issues are one factor that show the importance of collaboration across different functions in the company. But to your point of integrating DEI efforts throughout the business strategy, you know, probably makes sense to include people from lots of different functions and promoting that within, you know, the area that they're responsible for versus just like lumping it all on the chief diversity officer and not really empowering them.
Well, I will tell you, when I became the chief diversity officer, I had spent 9 years at Pfizer at that point, and this was considered to be an opportunity to expand my role and knowledge of the company and have impact for an area that our CEO was feeling challenged. And I quickly learned that if I was going to be successful, it really had to do with embedding D&I. There was no E at that point, D&I, into the processes within HR and to sort of use them in ways with the business to help them see how it could help become a competitive advantage for the company. And that was the mindset, and that was 2008, 2009. And that's really the way I like to call them highly evolved companies really see this work, where they are not looking at it as a nice to do, but where it is able to help them, you know, meet the goals that they have. And D&I should be considered a business goal when done right, because it can help be an enabler to the company's success.
Yeah. So you joined the iFit board of directors in January 2021, which was kind of a crazy time. The company was gearing up for an IPO. The whole market was very unpredictable. Not only were we all experiencing the meme stock craze, but consumer-facing businesses were dealing with intense supply chain disruptions, wildly fluctuating demand coming out of the pandemic. And iFit is a global longstanding brand, but they ended up having to withdraw on the IPO due to adverse market conditions. So I can only imagine that that was a very difficult decision. Are you able to discuss factors that signaled to the board that it was time to pivot on the company's financial and corporate strategies? And, you know, how long did you have to make those decisions and to act? And what were the governance learnings from how the board and management steered the company onto its current course?
What a time it was. I was recruited to the board, maybe it was like March of that year. And it was like drinking from a fire hose because, you know, gearing up for an IPO, this was my first board. And, you know, just all the information you needed to take in and doing the S1 and just all of that, you know, it was fast and furious. Lots of meetings, lots of decisions that needed to be made. And as, you know, we got to, I think it was September or so, and all of this hard work, at the end of the day, it was a decision that I am really proud of, because when you are that far along, it's just really easy to say, okay, we're just gonna hope for the best and move forward.
Yeah.
But we really were clear-eyed in terms of the volatility of the market, the pandemic. You know, the pandemic brought a lot of people into the market in terms of buying all types of equipment, but we were seeing that that was slowing down. And the question was, what is in the best interest of the company? And when you ask how much time, it did not take a lot of time. We were preparing to ring the bell, quite frankly. So it was, it was really at the 11th hour, so to speak. But I'm really, really proud of the decision, like I said, and it has been a tough few years, but I'm really excited with where we are as a company at this point. I think it was last week, we just released some new equipment onto the market that is innovative and really using technology at a whole nother level. And so really, really happy to see us, you know, get back to profitability. And so it's a great time for the company, even though the fitness industry is having a tough time still.
Yeah.
I have to say, that's a really coordinated board. When you go through something like that and you have to align, especially being so new to the board, it speaks to the culture of the board.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, and not to, you know, stop talking about some very specific and very important subjects, but zooming out in the art of crisis and reputation management, which is also very top of mind for companies and boards. How do you recommend boards and management monitor their reputation and emerging issues before they become a crisis? And are there strategies that are particularly effective at adapting to rapidly shifting circumstances and new information, which seems like this is happening more frequently than it did in the past?
For sure. For sure. I mean, you want your company, you want your board to be prepared for anything. And then when those of us who read about it, read, you know, when these things happen, it's just like, oh my gosh. And, you know, when you're in the midst of it, it's really hard to then try and put things in place. So it's really important to be proactive and put strategies in place ahead of time so that you have the guidance of how to go through the process and make good decisions that's not brought by fear or pressure, but where you have the frameworks from which you're working with. And so I think first and foremost, it's important to have listening tools in place, whether it be social media listening tools, and there's some Hootsuite and BrandWatch that really allows a company to understand what is being said, whether it be on social media or news monitoring, because sometimes you will get an inkling if there is, I like to call chatter in the system, of things going on that could kind of bubble up to be more than just a little blip. I think it's important that companies have a sense of what their reputation is. And so reputation audits on how the company is received. I know that a lot of companies have full teams who's responsible, reputation teams. And at Pfizer, we put a lot of time and effort and resources behind understanding what our reputation was within our peer set, but also across companies, right? And to plan for the crisis, because at some point, every company goes through one. I mean, it's just a matter of what the level is. And so to understand what is this decision-making sort of process that you go through, you know, who's the team that gets together? And I mean, this is just for me, in the company that I spent the majority of my time with, how we operated, and I can only assume, but also knowing, working with a lot of companies now and having insight, not all are as prepared and think ahead in that regard. And that's why you see some that handle these things very well, and you see others who are just like, oh my gosh, who is advising you?
If anyone.
if anyone, that's right. If anyone.
Yeah. Well, Karen, I feel like I could sit here and absorb your wisdom all day long. And so again, I'm so happy that you could join us, but we have reached our final question of the podcast, which is one that we ask all of our guests. And that is, what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the current conversation on the societal role of companies?
Well, it has really been, I can't believe the time went by so fast, but this was a great conversation. And thank you once again for having me. But I think, you know, I am always surprised when we need to call out the research that has been done by McKinsey, Harvard Business Review, Catalyst, all of these entities that show the value of women and the role that they have in terms of ensuring that, and the impact they have on corporate cultures and the value they bring from a perspective and creating, you know, more inclusive environments. And so all that is to say that it's a matter of using our voice. It's a matter of understanding the value that we bring. And I also think it's about supporting each other in these roles. And this podcast is a great way of really being able to lift up issues that are going on, raising awareness of women who are out there and making connections. So thank you.
Thank you. We love that. We love raising people up, especially women, and making connections and keeping ourselves and our listeners educated, because you know, everything's changing at such a rapid pace these days.
For sure.
Yeah. So thank you, Karen, for joining us today. We do really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And congratulations once again on your 5-year anniversary. And thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And for those who are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts. And we would love it if you would rate us while you're there. In addition, if you know a Women Governance Trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on this show, feel free to ping me or Liz on either LinkedIn or by email.
Thanks, everyone.